It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Wisconsin asylum seeker and her 8-year-old son were detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement earlier this week. They were sent to a Texas facility with a reputation for poor conditions.
Diana Socha-Torres is originally from Colombia. ICE detained Socha-Torres and her son on Tuesday at their Wisconsin Dells home. ICE had entered a deportation order against Socha-Torres in April.
The online ICE detainee locator indicates they're in ICE custody in the Dilley Immigration Processing Center in southern Texas.
President Trump has taken a number of actions to restrict asylum. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld some of the Trump administration's aggressive immigration approaches, including the ability to turn asylum seekers back at the southern border.
As we look at the legal protection of asylum, we have Mark Christopher, an immigration attorney representing Socha-Torres. Mark, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on.
And Aaron Barbado is here, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW-Wisconsin Law School. Hi, Aaron. We're having just a bit of trouble with Aaron's audio. Mark, first to you. You represent Socha-Torres. What is the latest on her and her child's status?
Yeah, so right now, I became aware of her situation just a couple of days ago. So we learned that she had been detained. We looked into her case, and it appears as though the immigration court changed the date of her immigration hearing. She wasn't aware of that and therefore missed that court date. They entered an order against her. They detained her and her son. And right now they remain in this holding facility down in Texas while we have filed a motion to reopen her case.
So she missed a hearing in her asylum case claiming she didn't get the hearing paperwork. Is that plausible?
Oh, absolutely. And I can tell you this is something that's very common because the immigration courts, especially now, are changing dates very, very frequently. And they do so sometimes with little or no notice. The original date that she got was February of 2025 for her first hearing. Then when she prepared her asylum application, the family went online with the help of a what we call a notario. They went online and they saw that her final date wasn't until 2028. So the family thought, well, we have some time. We can get things set up. They got their work permit. They filed their asylum application. And then they were shocked when I showed up at their home detaining her and her son. So it's very, very plausible that that someone would not be aware of or could miss their court date.
Aaron, here's a pending asylum case, no criminal record. Does that give you any indications about ICE's priorities now?
I mean, I think what Mark is alluding to is that everyone is a priority at this point. And, you know, as he discussed, it's incredibly difficult to stay informed about court and procedures because they're changed quite frequently and without notice to families or even their representatives.
You have visited the Dilley Immigration Processing Center at least twice in rural South Texas where they're holding Diana and her son. What were the conditions like when you were there?
So when I was there, it was, fully populated with recent arrivals on the southern border. And the things that, you know, we heard from the individuals that were detained there was generally, you know, overcrowding, concerns about food and water, and especially concerns about access to health care. Because of the close quarters, you know, there was a lot of colds and things that were going around. And oftentimes children wouldn't have access to, you know, even basic medication to help with fevers or pain. The conditions, you know, are quite depressing, and you're in a confined situation. You know, we're putting children in jail-like facilities, and I think we're forgetting their children.
The Trump administration has been detaining children alongside their parents. Diana's son, 8 years old. Do we know, Aaron, how many other children have been detained in Wisconsin?
You know, I don't have the specific number of how many other children have been detained. And, you know, there's family detention when a child is detained with generally with their biological parent. But there's also detention in the United States specifically for unaccompanied minors. So you kind of have to look at both sides of it. Mm-hmm. But this is not the first family from Wisconsin that has been detained at Dilley.
Mark, ICE told WPR in a statement that Soca Torres has chosen to return to Colombia with her son. Is that your understanding of what she wants to do now?
No, absolutely not. I've spoken with her significant other, who indicates, no, that's not the case. She wants to remain in the United States. She's got a real and legitimate fear of returning to Colombia with her son. And that's indicated by the fact that she's followed every procedure. She's filed her asylum application on time. So no, that's not the case.
How does having a client held out of state in Southern Texas impact your ability to effectively represent them?
Oh, it's so difficult, and it's something that I'm encountering, and it's a challenge on so many different cases that I have. I've had clients who have been held in Arizona, California, Louisiana, Kentucky. These are all people who had lived in Wisconsin. So not only is it difficult for me to visit them, I have to arrange then, I have to arrange conference calls or televideos, and many times these televideos have or sound quality, or sometimes they're in a part of the jail where other people are in the background. So I don't even have the ability to have them speak to me with any level of confidence or confidentiality. So it's extremely, extremely difficult.
In Soca Torres's case, what is next? You filed a motion to reopen her asylum case. What are next steps?
Right. So it goes before an immigration judge, and the immigration judge will determine whether or not it's reasonable that she missed her court date. They will look at what was sent to her and when. They will look at the reasons that we have indicated that she was not able to attend the court date. Those things would be, you know, of course, that she's filed her application on time, that she had a previous date of 2028, which we have record of. And then the judge will make the decision. The judge will make the decision, hey, yeah, it's reasonable. We're going to reopen the case. If that's the case, then we go forward with the asylum application. If it's not, then that would, it doesn't reopen the deportation order, and they're facing deportation back to Colombia.
We're talking with immigration attorney Mark Christopher, who represents Diana Soca Torres. Aaron Barbado is here, director of the UW Law School Immigrant Justice Clinic. Aaron, you know, turning to the Supreme Court ruling yesterday, rulings about immigration, what do these decisions allowing the Trump administration to turn asylum seekers back at the border, southern border, tell you about what might, you know, you can expect in the immigration legal landscape here in the U.S.?
So I think what the Supreme Court cases indicated to us is that, you know, the executive continues to have significant power over immigration policies, regardless of what the law says or what most of us interpret the law to be. So as we see that people are being enforcement has increased in the interior of the United States, now we're seeing that most people will not even be able to access the process of applying for asylum in the United States because it will be impossible, eliminating the ability for someone to apply when they arrive at the southern border. So significant concerns about human rights and access to asylum law in the United States for people around the world who are in need of refuge.
Mark, you represent Haitians who had temporary protected status. The Supreme Court ruling yesterday that President Trump can end those protections. How will the ruling affect your clients?
No, it's going to impact them greatly. They're going to be forced to return back to their home country with little or no notice. They're going to have to pick up their lives. They're going to have to sell their possessions. And what's frustrating about it is it allows them to revoke the TPS. In other words, they, meaning the administration, with little evidence that the country conditions have improved over what they were when the status was granted. Remember, this is something that was supposed to protect people who are in the United States from going back to their home countries that are war-torn, strife, natural disaster. And now the administrations can say, yeah, you have to go back, even though there's no indication that there's any improvement in your home country.
Aaron, do you think the government will focus now on targeted arrests of those people who are losing their temporary protected status?
I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility, and probably Yeah, probably in the future for these people. And as you know, Mark alluded to, quite disruptive. People were having to return to a country that they really haven't been to in a very long time. And specifically speaking about, you know, Haiti, it's not an established government. There's not much safety there, but their only option would potentially be to apply for asylum in the United States. And as we've talked about today, the ability to apply for asylum or even navigate the system is becoming nearly impossible.
Mark, in May, the Department of Homeland Security directed ICE to create policies to penalize attorneys who bring fraudulent asylum claims. Are you concerned that might put you or your work at risk?
I think it has a chilling effect on some attorneys, certainly, because they don't know how that will be enforced. And people are concerned that attorneys are going to be targeted unfairly. For me personally, it's not something that impacts me in any way. Every case that I put forward has a claim and a basis under the law and in the facts. But yeah, absolutely. I think it's a way of dissuading other attorneys from getting into this law and helping people who really need it.
With the Haitians you represent, the plaintiffs had claimed the president's derogatory comments about immigrants from Haiti, Somalia, other countries as evidence that, you know, of that push to end temporary protected status. What do you make of prejudice driving that argument? What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly that's who's been targeted, people from those countries. And, you know, if you've listened to the rhetoric during the election and even since the election, you know, you hear things, I don't even want to say the word of what, you know, what they call the countries, or, you know, sometimes you hear the president talking about immigrants as being animals or they're not human. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it's concerning, and it's one of the reasons that myself and people like Aaron are fighting so hard and trying to get some of these people's stories, because I find that once you meet the immigrants, the people, the Haitians, the people who are on TPS, once you meet them, once you work with them, almost to a person, everybody likes them. They're like, oh, well, maybe these people can stay.
We have to leave it there. Mark Christopher, Aaron Barbeito, immigration attorneys.